So good morning, everybody. My name is Jeff Keeney. I'm the director of the LSU Ag Center Botanic Gardens in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. To give you a little bit of background on my title and my talk, I've worked in the land grant system my entire career. I've been a research scientist and also an educator at Louisiana State University for about 15 years. And about 8 years ago, I was given the challenge at one of our major research stations in the middle of Baton Rouge. We have about 400 acres. To not only continue to conduct the research that we do, facilitate the different scientists from the university, but also to create a botanic garden to really encompass the whole of agriculture. And so one of the first things that I did was I tried to do a little bit of research on botanic gardens, and I found the American Public Gardens Association. Become a member, and my life hasn't been the same since. It's just been a really, really incredible experience, the melding of both the land grant system and also botanic gardens experience. And I thought one of the important things is just to remind everybody what the land grant system is and how it got established. After the Civil War, there was really a huge need for us to be able to supply food to a growing population. So the Morrill Act was initiated in 1862, then along with the Hatch Act and the Smith-Lever Act to create our tripart mission of the land grant university system. The land-grant university system today includes a teaching, research, and extension mission, and we've become full-fledged universities along with colleges of agriculture. And borrowing from Dr. Diaz, the university, or UC Davis, saying that the land-grant system can be compared as in its success to things like vaccine and the invention of the light bulb. It's just been a hugely successful program. For both feeding our country and also in food security and nutrition. But we've gone through a huge transformation over these last more than 100 years, in that in the 1790s, when we really initiated the land grant system, a large part of our workforce were farmers. And then by the year 2000, only about 2% of our labor force are in the actual direct farming occupation. And so the connectivity with agriculture that we had many, many years ago has slowly disappeared and has decreased significantly. The other thing that's decreased along with that is state and federal funding. And I think part of the reason for that is because we don't have that connectivity anymore with the general population on what really agriculture is. The other thing that's occurring is our enrollment in all of agriculture, from horticulture, agronomy, crop sciences, has really decreased precipitously over the last 10 years, and it's something that we really need to be aware of. No, we don't have the jobs that we used to have as far as direct farming, but there's many, many jobs indirectly that affect agriculture and food security that I think a lot of our students don't think about or know. And then the other part of the thing is we've got this new term, industrialized agriculture, this big, scary monster that's partnered with industry and is really become a bad term and given agriculture a bad perception. So looking at the areas of impact that land grant systems name, we have six areas of impact that we really focus on: food security, nutrition and health, youth, families, communities, environmental stewardship, of course, agricultural systems, energy, and bioproducts. And at least those top four and maybe those top five are very, very closely related to with botanic gardens and what we do in the botanic garden community. So I think we have a lot in common that we really don't think about. In the land grant system today, we've worked heavily with private industry, again, kind of giving us a bad name sometimes. The Monsanto, the big bad Monsanto in agriculture, along with that biotechnology and the lack of understanding of the public how biotechnology has affected agriculture. And also along with that, the governmental regulations that are put on land-grant universities when we're doing biotechnology and some of the work that we're doing has really made a struggle in order to move forward in this programming. Also, because of the lack of state funding, we've got a really high competitive grant funding that we all try to attain. Also, computer applications have increased, along with technology transfer, patents, and licensing. So we've moved away from that very traditional agriculture into a new modern age that I think, again, we need to educate the public on how it works and that understanding. So the future of land-grant universities, we continue to struggle for funding. We're making headway on that. But it's also forced us to do a lot of things that we weren't doing before. And part of that is greater cooperation between land-grant universities in our research, education, and also our extension areas. The other thing is we're slowly losing a lot of our units in land-grant universities. So I would say in the next 20 years, a lot of the programs that we have in every land-grant university are going to be fewer and far between, and we're going to have bigger land-grant universities. And I think this is, again, contributing to that disconnect between the public and agriculture, because there's just not that many people connected with it anymore. And so I think one of the greatest challenges that we really have is to connect with our growing urban population, and there's a lot of ways that I think we can do that, and I think we have a lot of opportunities that we need to seize. So how can we rise to that challenge? So some of the assets that we already have is we do have our undergraduate program, our colleges of agriculture. And again, I think we really need to work on advertising and getting out the information to the general public what type of career opportunities there are. Home gardens, the most clicked on are the most clicked on sites in our land grant systems are for home gardeners. So more than any other commodity, and many times combined, home gardeners are going to our websites to find out information. So there is a connectivity there. We have an incredible Master Gardener program that is very helpful in helping us in our extension activities. And then also, as Sarah mentioned earlier, we do have university-related public gardens, and actually quite a few, and I'll look at that in a minute. And the other part of it is we have an incredible extension arm of the land grant system that has done an incredible amount of work for farming in general, but I think we lack in our ability to communicate that with the general public in what we do. So I just went through the APGA membership and looked at how many states had university or college related gardens, and I could find all but about 4 states. So we're scattered in almost every state across the country. And then if you kind of delve down in that a little bit further, all of those states in yellow have affiliation with a land-grant university. Their public gardens is affiliated with it. Now, that doesn't mean that they're doing a lot of work together with the scientists and the extension educators at the university, but again, we have a tremendous opportunity that we need to seize here. Now, a lot of my coworkers, when they think of botanic gardens, they think of this. They think of the old Victorian era garden for the elite, and it's just this beautiful display garden that you kind of walk through. And in fact, that's not the truth. Botanic gardens through time, but also have changed tremendously. And I think one of the poster child, and somebody even just mentioned in their talk, is the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. They're very, very connected with their land-grant university and have had a horticulture research center for many years that it's actually a lot of fruit crop research that they've actually released over 150 different types of plant material. They've also got a strong plant conservation and protection research program, which is right up there with some of the impacts that we're looking at in the land-grant system. And more recently, they're starting a new exhibit and display garden, the Red Barn Farm, that's going to encompass not just fruit and horticulture, but all of agricultural production. So I think we have some models that we can look to and challenges for some of our other land-grant or university-connected gardens. Denver Botanic Gardens is also an incredible garden in that they're not really affiliated closely with the land-grant university, but they've taken it upon themselves to create Chatfield Farms, where they have a community-supporting agriculture or CSA farm. The public can come out and not only get the fruits and vegetables from the farm, but also they have an exhibit where they can go walk through the farm and understand the production side of agriculture. They're also very connected with the city from that farm and creating human community gardens as well as urban farms. So what are some of the things that we can do in the land grant system, I think, to bridge that gap with public gardens and educate the community in agriculture? And so taking from some of my experiences in agriculture, we have farmer field days. We have many, many research stations scattered across the state that all have farmer field days. So these are great field days set up to educate the farmers on the new varieties, the new research that has been done. But why don't we take those farmer field days and maybe the next day or the next week, we have public field days that kind of go over those same things, but we expand the experience that the public can have. So we have a garden fest at Burden every year right after our fruit and vegetable field day. We invite the Louisiana Egg Commission to come and fix omelets with fresh vegetables so we get exposure to the egg farmers, the egg producers. Also, we do, with those trials that we do in the research plots, we just don't have the farmers look at them, but we have the public look at them, but they can also do taste tests. What do people like to come to? They love to come and experience food. So they get to taste test the peppers and the tomatoes. The other thing is that we have a food incubator that helps the general public, if they have a food product that they'd like to develop and take to market, this food incubator helps them do that. It's become hugely popular, and so we invite them to come out and those new food markets to come out and give taste tests of their products. The other thing we do is we partner with the Louisiana Culinary Institute, and they fix and prepare fresh food from our fresh fruits and vegetables. And we partner then with the Extension in providing recipes and also the nutritional aspects of those foods prepared with fresh fruits and vegetables. The other thing on more the grain and the crop side of agriculture is that we have lots of experts in agronomy and crop sciences. And so with some of the land that we have in the middle of Baton Rouge, we created a corn maze. We got the expertise from the corn researchers to grow the corn and select the corn, and then precision agriculture in order to create the maze. Now, there's lots of corn mazes across the United States this time of year. Last year, we had over 10,000 people come in just 5 Saturdays that we had it open. So it's a huge draw for the public to come and experience agriculture a little bit. But what are some of the things that we can do to kind of bridge that gap again to get the public more enthused and understanding about agriculture? So again, hearkening back to the farm field day that we have, where we have hay rides with the farmers. They come out and see the research that's being done and learn from the researchers. Why can't we do the same thing with the public? So we have hay rides as part of this corn maze. We go to the different plots. Research plots that we have at the research station, at the Botanic Gardens. They can go and they can pick satsumas, learn about citrus production in the citrus industry. We also have a petting zoo, so they can learn about the the animal side of agriculture. And I had a little video on this corn crib. So we took 4 tons of corn, surrounded it by hay bales, and this is one of the most sought-after place for children. They love to play in this corn. It's like a big sand pile, but they're really immersed in actual corn. The other thing that we have at field days is we have our demonstration plots. So we allow time for the farmers to come and learn about all the new types and varieties of corn. And so borrowing from the work that the Botanic Gardens did in D.C. with Ari, and celebration of wheat and their wheat exhibitions, I thought, well, why can't we do an exhibition on corn at their corn maze? So I worked with one of our scientists, our plant pathologist, who does a lot of corn breeding. He helped pick a bunch of older corn lines, starting with Tiacente and then graduating all the way through to the GMOs. Corn has an incredible, interesting history that I think helps people understand about our agricultural history, but also the future of ag. The other thing that we've got a great opportunity at Land Grants is we can involve our students. So here we have a graduate student that is explaining the history of corn with the field trips that we have. So we have about 2,000 kids that come out in field trips on Fridays to experience the corn maze, but also to learn a little bit about agriculture. And so to finish up, I'll just kind of go over some of the things that we work with on this exhibit on the origin of corn. It's over 7,000 years old. And one of the interesting things also, we celebrate another scientist, George Fadel, who figured out that our corn originally came from this bushy grass to what we have today. And corn's very instrumental, you know, in this time of year as part of our Thanksgiving celebration and how important it was to the colonies whenever they came to the United States. The other thing, really cool thing about corn, unlike, you know, a beautiful petunia or hydrangea, corn has an incredible, interesting flowering. And so really another, I think, neat and interesting thing that children and even adults can learn about that they may not have understood about plants and agriculture. Also, it's interesting how we've gotten to where we have with corn, where farmers were selecting it by themselves, to now where we've done selective breeding through our land grant system to produce corn and hybrids with greater yields. Also, the different types of corn. A lot of times people don't think about the field corn and how it's different from popcorn and how that's different from sweet corn and the different uses that we have of this Native American crop. And also, all of the different uses of corn. It's just tremendous. Over 3,500 products that we use every day come from some type of corn product. And then finally, kind of brushing on a subject that a lot of people don't like to talk to and a lot of people are afraid of, especially in agriculture, is modern corn and genetically modified organisms. And not just let people know about the problems that may occur with it, but what are the benefits that have happened because of GMOs? The survival of corn now that's better able to survive our drought conditions and the changing temperatures we have, so it's more resilient to climate change. It's a resistance to disease and insects, so we decrease the amount of pesticides used. It's increased yield. We reduce the amount of land that we need to use and also increase in its nutrition for people that eat it. And finally, nothing's better than a little action figure here. We have Kid Corn, who says that, yes, the agricultural community has done the research, and GMOs are safe to humans, animals, and to the environment. So to kind of come back full circle again, I think we have a lot of opportunities in the land grant system, both research, education, and extension, in partnering with the public gardens that we can make that crossover and continue to educate the public, importantly, on agriculture and the advances that we made and the importance of it. Thank you.